Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sirloin Punter Podcast. It's your host, Travis, and today we're going to talk about the last call for the IDR waiver slash IDR account adjustment. If you listen to this podcast, you probably know what this is. You've probably heard me talk about it several times, but the final deadline, and if you listen to this pod, you'll also get the joke, final, because they always keep extending everything they do here in the Biden administration when it comes to student loans. But the supposed final deadline is April 30th. Now, it's very possible that by the time this podcast comes out, that they might have already announced they're going to extend it to June 30th. If it does, this podcast is still relevant, but it's just something that I want to really share because I think a lot of people still have no idea what this is, have no idea how they could benefit, have no idea what to do. Let's just go back to the very beginning and the genesis of the IDR waiver. Okay. So I think that this is probably a program that was dreamed up by someone that works for Senator Elizabeth Warren, or maybe it was the senator herself that dreamed it up. I'm not sure. The reason I think that is for a couple reasons. So one, it was her office that pushed through the making forgiveness tax-free that happened in the American Rescue Plan in 2021. And then I think it was either shortly before that or shortly after that, her office sent the Department of Education a question that asked a bunch of, you know, politicians often do this, right? If you ever see a congressional hearing, politician will often ask a question with a very leading answer that they're trying to get to. So her letter to the Department of Education was very like pointed on asking them to very specifically define how many people had been in a repayment for a certain number of years. Now, it's notable, too, that the way she asked this question asked them to define it basically based on the loan that was the oldest that somebody had. In other words, she asked like how long a borrower's been paying specifically. So she's defining it in the way that the IDR waiver defined the problem, which is that if you've been in repayment for 20 years, you might have one loan that's 20 years old. You might have gone back to grad school and taken out more loans. And so, you know, the borrower has been in some kind of student loan repayment for 20 plus years, but the debt has been borrowed over a longer period of time, right? But the IDR waiver was groundbreaking because it allows people to consolidate and get credit for their consolidation loan based off of whatever loan is the oldest. What's so interesting about this is that was really a preview. Like, I think that, you know, in general, whenever I'm talking about student loan policy and, you know, who does a great job on student loan policy, it's pretty much entirely the Democratic Party that cares deeply about student loan policy and plays the long game. Republicans on student loan policy have essentially lost in terms of their policy preferences, like time and time and time again. And so this IDR waiver was something that I think that they had been planning for years, right? And this was in early 2021 when all this was being discussed. And so remember how everything happened, right? The first thing that came out was the PSLF waiver. Why? Because that was the easiest thing to do. Because the PSLF waiver, you're able to essentially paint the really the most amazing positive example that you can, right? Remember how the PSLF waiver was essentially announced the day or two before CBS 60 Minutes did some sort of special on like military service members who had not gotten PSLF and gotten rejected, right? And a couple days after that, PSLF waiver announced. A lot of times this happens for all administrations. You know, these things are very much like coordinated by really smart people that like know what they're doing. So it's very likely that they tipped off somebody at some, you know, media outlets of, hey, let's build up the fact that this is a big problem. And it was. I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm just saying this is how all this stuff happened. And then the PSLF waiver, that's how they started. They started with the PSLF waiver. I still think the reason they did that was because they were concerned about legal challenges from FFEL investors, FFEL investors. Now, those are people that have FFEL loans that are commercially owned but federally guaranteed. And by doing something like the PSLF waiver that encourages consolidation, that takes away the interest income of those investors, I think the administration was super worried about that. And so they started off with the PSLF waiver to essentially do something that was fairly quiet, right? They didn't start with the IDR waiver because they didn't want people to file lawsuits. So you start with the PSLF waiver, make it sound like it's no big deal. PSLF waiver, very successful, right? Really had a ton of benefits to a ton of people. And a lot of our clients got a ton of benefit out of it too. Now, a little bit after that, there was a recognition that the PSLF waiver was not going far enough, right? It wasn't helping as many people. It was only helping public servants. So what the Biden administration did is then they went after folks to help folks that had debts for a long period of time. in a very similar fashion. There was some strategic leaking to certain key reporters about, you know, how many people have been in repayment for decades, right? And remember that letter that was a response from Senator Warren that she sent to the Department of Education. There were, I think off the top of my head, 4 million people that had been in repayment at least 20 years in that letter, the way it was defined. And so effectively, that's 10% of all people that can be forgiven immediately, if you think about needing 20 years worth of credit for forgiveness. So anyways, they came up with the IDR waiver, and initially, I'll never forget this, like the IDR waiver, they announced it, and I think I freaked out because I knew how big of a deal it was. I like called a reporter about it, and they were just like, leave me alone. I don't blame them. It was a huge deal, and in the press release, I'll never forget how they like were like, a few borrowers, like they really, again, were so terrified of the lawsuit risk. I'm not very, you know, politically smart or politically adept, but clearly the people that made these programs are. Because in the announcement, it said like, a few borrowers might get a little bit of help. You know, it was like the most toned down, understated, not really actually probably true press release that I've ever seen in student loans, because it was so amazing. It was so helpful for so many people, but it was also so understated intentionally to try to hide like things so people wouldn't like freak out about the legal stuff. At this point, you know, you remember what was happening in the country. You're starting to see like frustration over inflation. You're starting to see pushback against President Biden on his domestic proposals, like his approval ratings going down a whole lot. And then you've got the midterms where everybody's expecting just an absolute wipeout, right, on the Democratic side. And student loans were still paused at that time, and then they came out with cancellation. Now, the cancellation, I think there's a lot of different reasons that like you could argue that they did that. I think, honest to goodness, one of the reasons they did cancellation was just to defend the IDR waiver and the PSLF waiver. I'm not kidding, because if you don't do cancellation, then you still have those two other programs that exist that people could try to oppose, right? And it might pay attention to, because the opposition party wants to be seen to be doing something. They tried to do the cancellation, it got blocked, but through the PSLF and IDR waivers, they canceled like $140 billion. Now, that's a huge understatement too, because that was just the stuff that's gotten canceled already. That's not counting all the stuff that'll be canceled a lot faster because somebody got 15 years of credit on their consolidated loan instead of 2 years of credit on their consolidated loan. That's not included in that $140 billion that he's canceled through, mostly through those two programs. Now, this IDR waiver, it was supposed to end, I think, like December 31st, if I can remember correctly. So December 2023, right, it was supposed to end, and they extended it. Well, why did they extend it? It's because there's new consolidation rules going into effect in July 2024. And those new rules are really, really different from anything that has existed previously. So it used to be that consolidation would wipe away all the credit towards forgiveness of any kind, right? If you consolidated, you reset your clock, right? That's the way it was before the pandemic. But starting July 2024, what's going to happen is you're going to have a weighted average of your payments. And that weighted average is going to be what your consolidation loan is going to get credited for. So with this new weighted average set of rules, it's going to be a lot more confusing to know whether or not you should consolidate. And what's really interesting is in December, when the IDR waiver was supposed to end, remember the IDR, and it's technically, the technical name for it is the IDR account adjustment. But the IDR account adjustment / IDR waiver that was supposed to end December 2023, what that would have done is created a period of time between January and July in early 2024 where consolidating would have wiped away all of your credit towards forgiveness. That is why I'm not going to be shocked if they decide to randomly extend the IDR waiver until June 30th, because technically, as far as I can figure, May 1 to June 30th, if you consolidate, all of your credit is wiped towards your loans, which that would make no sense. So I think that they said April 30th to try to, again, prevent challenges to the IDR waiver legally, and then also push people to take action earlier than they would if you said, hey, you can do it until June 30th. So that you get a little bit of like more of an even workload where everything's not being rushed all at once. I think that you probably are going to see them extended again to June 30th. But at that point, I do actually think that's done. I think the IDR waiver ends because you've got all these new rules that go into place in July 2024. Things like paying 5% of your income on undergrad loans for save, right? Stuff that they want to have take it, you know, go into effect at that expected time. So I think that we're going to see that IDR waiver finally end at that point. And that's going to mean a lot of different rules. It's going to be very different talking about student loans after that date. And so you cannot count on the IDR waiver getting extended, right? So if you could at all benefit, and the way you would know this is if you have loans that have any type of different history to them, you probably could benefit. You need to double check before it's too late. If you have friends that you went to school with, that let's say you took out some FFELP loans, or let's say that you did a program with people in their 20s, 30s in graduate school, those folks very, very likely have some older loans that could get their credit applied to the newer loans they have by consolidating. And it's really almost too late, right? April 30th. It's like very imminent. What do I want to say for last call for the IDR waiver? If you want to consolidate to get extra credit, you know, you have only a few days left to do it. So to consolidate, we have a link at studentplanner.com/consolidate that'll take you to the federal website, just because the federal website URL is longer. But you know, you can go to that site, consolidate your loans. Remember, that resets your payment. So that resets your IDR payment, where you've got to pay something based on your more recent tax return. So that's something to weigh the pros and cons against. Another thing that's really helpful is you can get old history, like from back before your loans were consolidated with PSLF, applied to your new consolidation. So that's also going to be a little different. So if you could get PSLF credit, you can consolidate, submit your employer certification form, studentaid.gov/PSLF. You don't have a ton of time left, right? You've got to get this in. If you have done a consult with us before, studentloanplanner.com/refer, you can go there and actually create a referral code and refer friends, and you can get a little bit of money for that. And so can your friend. That's only open to people who have done a student loan consult before, studentloanplanner.com/refer. And, you know, I think this is a great time to bring up awkwardly the subject of student loans with friends, because it could mean the difference between them having their entire balance forgiven and not. I can't tell you how often I run into somebody who's in their late 30s, early 40s that has all FFEL loans that has simply kept them around because the interest rate's 1% or 2%. And all they have to do is consolidate and go apply for it at studentaid.gov/PSLF. And the whole thing could be forgiven if they've got 10 years of PSLF credit, or if they have 20 years for undergrad loans, or 25 years for grad loans, doing literally anything, they could get the whole thing forgiven. So this is such a tremendous opportunity. I will mention it one last time for this pod, just to remind people one last time. But before that, I thought it'd be kind of fun to take some questions. We haven't taken listener questions in a while. So I'll read off a few questions here from our voicemail, and let's just see. We've got the first one. There's actually a few questions in this, but I think all of them are really interesting questions and would appeal to quite a few people. So let's go ahead and listen to this first listener and series of questions.
Good morning, Travis. Thank you for listening to my voicemail. I'm a long-time listener of your podcast, and I appreciate everything you do for us regarding our student loans. My first question is the 20-year cancellation. I hear about it. I did not take out my first loan until the fall of 2004. So August 2004, it will be coming up on 20 years. I had a friend say that there's a complaint out there that borrowers that took out loans 20 or 25 years and they wasn't automatically forgiven, there's a complaint that you can file. She also recommended that I do this complaint because it may go away next year. I heard that the complaint is pretty lengthy. Is it something I should do? And then if it goes away, I can possibly be grandfathered in or just hold off. Also, with the 20-year forgiveness, if for whatever reason I do get forgiven, do you have to pay taxes on that? Because I owe six figures of student loans. My next question is, I'm in PSLF. And I heard on a YouTube video that they have something July 2004 that you can take whatever qualifying payments you have, subtract it for the 120 payments that you need, and then you could take the amount of payments that's left times the amount that you owe and literally just pay off your loan. For example, I have currently 68 loans. By time this July 2024 comes, I'll have 77. If I were to take 120 from 77, I get 43 payments. I'm on the save plan. If I take $200 times the 43 payments, that's $8,600. So she said that you can take this $8,600 and it should wipe away all your loans. I mean, granted, with the ECF and stuff like that. She said this was a new update in January 2000, 24, but I do not see that on the Department of Education. So I just wanted to see, have your team or you heard anything about this? Because that would make me only pay $8,600 versus the six figures of debt that I do owe. Supposedly, this is supposed to be different than buyback, which to my understanding, which I didn't do a bunch of research, but I thought buyback was something where you already had over 120 payments, but I'm not honestly quite sure. And then my third question is, I was in repayment in October. So I pay October and November. Mohila put me in a administration forbearance for December and then took me out of it and made my payments start back in January and February. So I paid October, I paid November, I did not pay December. It made it ineligible. And my question is, I've heard in different PSLF groups that people have called back and asked for refunds for October and November. Do I qualify for that refund or not? Because technically, I was in repayment. I physically go in there and pay my loans. I don't have it automatically debited. So that's just my question there. I did receive for February's payment that I got something from Credit Karma that said that my payment has been deferred. I made a payment between January 24th and February 4th, and it's been deferred. But then Mohila sent the message that said that the payment did count. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Okay, so first, if somebody's in payments, been making payments since 2004, the question is can I get forgiveness after 20 years? And the answer is it depends. So a whole lot of people that have borrowed for the first loan, they graduate in 2004, a whole lot of people go back to school at some point. That's just what I've seen. So if you took out that loan and you went back to school, they would have put you into in-school deferment. You would not have gotten credit during that period. Another thing is if you have loans from graduate school in addition to undergrad, you've got to have 25 years until forgiveness for grad school loans and 20 years for undergrad loans. If you consolidate a loan from 2004 with a bunch of loans from grad school, which if somebody owes six figures, they probably do owe loans from grad school, then you would not get forgiveness after 20 years. You'd get it after 25 years. You do not have to file any complaint to get this. You do not have to file a complaint. You just literally would get it after you have 25 years of total repayment credit. And remember that during the IDR waiver, forbearance can count, right? Deferment can count if it's a certain type of forbearance and deferment. So that's changing. Think about that. So probably if somebody's in this situation where they have loans from 2004, the smart move, if you haven't already, is to consolidate everything together. That's literally the IDR waiver that we're talking about that expires. I want to cover the question about PSLF in terms of PSLF buyback. PSLF buyback essentially is not nearly as exciting as really a lot of us thought it was going to be. There's a lot of like rumors out there. And in general, I would just not listen to a lot of these rumors. Like a lot of people sort of just like say things and it almost feels like it's made up. So you cannot go like, you have 42 months of credit left, write a check for this 42 months right now and you're done. It's not how PSLF works. You've got to have the time and job, right? You've got to be making those monthly payments while you're working in public service. So you have to have the 10 cumulative years worth of public service. You unfortunately can't do that. So that's just a good example of things that people say when you can't actually do something. And you know, real quick point about the comment about forbearance and administrative forbearance and that kind of stuff. If we think about the forbearance situation, essentially, you can't really think about turning like a giant steamship or something like this. Like if you were in administrative forbearance, when they put you into that, like you can get refunds, but those refunds really should happen automatically. So if you made any payments while you were in administrative forbearance, you shouldn't have to ask for those refunds. It should just straight up happen. Hopefully that helps. And let's listen to another question.
Hi, Travis. My name is Bob. I have two questions. One, where do I find the date when I have to recertify my income for IDR? Two, about how long does it take to get forgiveness after the 120th payment? Thank you.
So for this question, basically, the best way to do it in my mind is just go to studentaid.gov and log in, and then you should see like a My Data. Well, you should really see your name in the top right-hand corner. There's a drop-down. You can click on My Aid, and then you should see it's basically the NSLDS download that says like My Data Download, something like that. And then if you just download the little ugly TXT file, you can Control-F and type in IDR. you can actually control off anniversary. You'll see your IDR anniversary date. I think you probably could just call your servicer too and ask, and they probably should have that information pretty handy as well. In terms of when you get forgiveness, once you made your 120th payment, I would say on average, I see it take 3 to 5 months. Some people that have been submitting things all along the way, it goes a little bit faster. Then if you've never submitted it before, then it takes a little bit more time. Now let's listen to another question.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I've been teaching at a community college in New Jersey since 2012. And I started out by teaching ESL credit courses. And then in 2018, I switched to the Adult Basic Skills program where I don't teach credit courses. When I recently submitted my PSLF application to HR, I was told that only the credit courses qualified for the 3.35 factor. Is that correct? I hope it's not.
The thing you got to realize with PSLF is like the HR people are trying to do their best and they're trying to not commit something that could come back on them. So HR people are very conservative, very cautious, always want to try to do the most conservative thing that they can do. And there is no positive thing that happens to HR when they sign off on the PSLF form. I guess technically you could say you keep working for that institute or organization, and that's a positive thing. But in general, the positive upside for HR is not there. And then the negative upside for HR is also not there, but they don't know that. So when, you know, someone's asked to attest something, the HR people are naturally conservative and scared. And hey, you know, I'm not really sure I should do that. You do have ways to submit something without a employer signature and have it be considered, right? But yeah, I think that it would be best to say, well, you know, it doesn't really seem like it's very clear. And what if we let them make that decision instead of the employer, essentially try to get them to sign something that says you're working at this place during those periods. And I think that, you know, it's worth giving it a shot. In worst case scenario, you might have to submit a separate application to like self-attest or something like that. And maybe even get the, you know, just type in like FSA complaint to just file the complaint and try to get clarification for your own sake. Let's do one more question.
Hey, Travis and Student Loan Planner team. Just wanted to thank you for all that you do. Thank you for the information you provide in this podcast and how it's so accurate and up to date. My question is for you today in regard to the IDR waiver and the direct loan consolidation process. Next month, my recertification date is due, so towards the end of March. I decided due to based off of family site change and also with my income from the previous tax year, by doing a direct loan consolidation through studentaid.gov, it would not change my monthly payments of my student loans by doing consolidation. I decided to do that in order to help also with the IDR waiver that is set forth at this time. Now that I've done that application for the consolidation, do I now have to submit an additional application on studentaid.gov for recertification of my income as requested by my loan service provider, Mohila? Thanks.
So for this type of question, essentially what usually happens is you do the IDR application at the time of consolidation. So in StudentAid, you're going through the consolidation. You've got to do that IDR application at the same time. But let's say you want to recertify because your income drops. Well, you can do that at any time at studentaid.gov/IDR. So if you go there, you can go in and change your payment if you have different income information you want to provide anytime you want to. So that's what I would suggest is if you're at all concerned, go to studentaid.gov/IDR and just re-enter your income information. So again, just one final thought here, guys. April 30th, final shot at the IDR waiver. That is a big deal. It's something that many people will be very frustrated that they're missing out on. The Biden administration is trying to make a new rule to help reach people that might not have known about this, but that's going to kind of depend on this election and which way it goes. So this IDR waiver is a huge opportunity for anybody to get extra credit on their loans if you have loans with different numbers of years of credit or months of credit. And you know, if you need somebody to help figure out if you should consolidate or not and make sure you get this in before the deadline, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/book and our team can give you a hand. Also, if you have any questions about stuff that's happening with student loans beyond the IDR waiver, like the weighted average consolidation rules, 5% income for undergrad, what might happen with Trump versus Biden in the election on student loan, the future of student loans, what might occur with a recent Republican lawsuit that was trying to eliminate the SAVE plan, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and ask your questions. Thanks everybody for listening. Have a great week.